Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in the next half hour, we're going to continue with an analysis of the German geopolitical role in affecting the breakup of Yugoslavia and leading to the current unpleasantness in the Balkans. This program was excerpted from the One Step Beyond show of May 16, 1999.
It has been estimated that in 1994, the former East Germany received at least 176 billion Deutschmarks in investment and income pension support of the 16 million population. This has been paid for from higher taxation levied on the citizens of what was West Germany and by higher levels of unemployment in other EC member states. There can be little doubt that the German government reunification policy was self-serving and to the detriment of most EC member states. Bear in mind that the architect of German reunification was Günter Strassmayr, Helmut Kohl's chief of staff at the time. His son, Andreas Strassmayr, then came to the United States, hooked up with the white supremacist compound headed up by Robert Millar, that entitled Elohim City. Carol Howe, an ATF informant who passed a polygraph examination, stated that Timothy McVeigh was the protege of Andreas Strassmayr and that Strassmayr was the mastermind of the Oklahoma City bombing. The next section of this paper is entitled German Foreign Policy Towards the United Kingdom, and note that the extraordinarily high interest rates that the Bundesbank mandated in order to reunify Germany and to equate the East German mark with the West, that basically helped to shove Europe in even deeper into recession and had a very deleterious effect on other EC member countries. Specifically, Germany has had a very hostile policy towards the United Kingdom, that discussed here by T.W. Carr in this paper. The U.K. is somewhat of a special case as far as Germany is concerned, both historically when, allied with the Serbs, she was twice instrumental in defeating German expansionism, and currently when the U.K. impedes Germany's domination of the EC. However, from the end of World War II until the demise of communism, Germany needed the UK as an ally to help defend its eastern border. Geopolitical circumstances changed in 1989, the communist threat evaporated, and once again, German government actions indicate that the UK is seen as an impediment to Germany's strategic ambitions. Germany has taken steps to undermine the UK's financial standing and its credibility within the EU, NATO, and the North Atlantic Alliance. When the pound sterling came under pressure from speculators, no support was forthcoming from the German Finance Ministry and the Bundesbank. Indeed, they increased the degree of speculation, saying the pound was overvalued. Despite spending millions of pounds trying to maintain the international value of sterling, the British government was forced to withdraw the pound from the European Exchange Rate Mechanism, or ERM. UK Prime Minister John Major was made to appear politically weak and not in control of the British economy. On the other hand, the German financial institutions reinforced their already formidable international reputation, and the Deutschmark was perceived as the most powerful currency within the EU and indeed in Europe. By the way, it was George Soros and his operation that led the speculation on sterling at this time. Continuing. In similar circumstances, Chancellor Kohl gave massive financial support to the French government when the French franc came under speculative pressure. A partial examination of the difference in treatment meted out to the two countries by Germany is the fact that the French government had followed Germany's dictate and made the Bank of France independent of the French Ministry of Finance. In so doing, the French government moved closer to Germany, but at the same time it effectively made the Bank of France subordinate to the Bundesbank. A similar dictate to John Major was promptly turned down, as the British Prime Minister knew only too well that such a move would weaken his government's control of the British economy to the benefit of Germany. However, because of Germany's growing strength within the European community, the British Prime Minister was unable to prevent the new European Central Bank being established in Frankfurt rather than in the city of London, the traditional international financial center for Europe. At the same time, Germany persuaded France to join with it to form the Euro Corps, a joint Franco-German military formation designed to be a 40,000-strong force not under the control of NATO. Only German and French would be used by the new formation, unlike NATO, which uses English as its prime language. As mentioned previously, when Europe went into economic recession, Germany refused to lower its interest rate as a method of stimulating the EU's economies, in effect making EU states fund the reunification of Germany. Through these and many other actions, Chancellor Kohl attempted to weaken the UK government's economic position and its influence in all the European institutions. Germany is now actively seeking a seat at the United Nations Security Council, even if this turns out to be at the expense of the UK seat. By the way, this again was written in August of 95, or presented in August of 95. That bid for a United Nations Security Council seat is now on hold. Continuing. It should be remembered that by breaking up the former Yugoslavia, Germany has created four new member states at the United Nations in New York. All four of these new states will vote in favor of Germany being given a seat on the UN Security Council. For its part, Germany is playing an active role to gain EU membership for Croatia and Slovenia. In Slovenia's first multi-party government following secession from Yugoslavia, no less than six ministers were of German descent. And by the way, I would note, too, that if Kosovo becomes independent, even the other nations, not only from the former Yugoslavia, but also other German client states, such as Slovakia, which was broken off from Czechoslovakia by German action, not unlike the way Slovakia was set up as an independent puppet state by Hitler, and also the Baltic states as well, formerly part of the former Soviet Union, all of those countries are owe fealty, so to speak, to Germany, and all are basically going to be German proxies on the European Union. I would note that Joschka Fischer, the aforementioned Joschka Fischer, has been lobbying to change the way European Union votes are affected so that it's a majority vote instead of giving any one significant country veto power. That would work to Germany's benefit. And please note that one of the major geopolitical goals that Germany is seeking in Europe by breaking up various countries such as the former Yugoslavia, the former Czechoslovakia, the former Soviet Union, is that it will create, again, these client states which will further cement German domination of the EU. Continuing. This next section is called Germany and Croatia, Resurrection of the Pure Croatian Nation State. Reliable intelligence sources claimed in 1990 that in 1988, Mr. Tudjman paid a secret visit to the Federal Republic of Germany and met with Chancellor Kohl and other senior government ministers. It was said that the aim of the visit was to formulate a joint policy to break up Yugoslavia, leading to the creation of a new independent state of Croatia with international borders in the form originally set up by the German Chancellor Adolf Hitler in 1941. At a secret meeting in Bonn, the German government pledged its political, financial, and covert military support for Croatia's secession from the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. The intelligence source claimed such an action fitted neatly into Germany's strategic objectives in respect to the Balkans, which included bringing Roman Catholic Croatia and Slovenia within the German economic zone, gaining direct access to the Adriatic and Mediterranean, and securing a favored nation status with the oil and gas-producing Arab states. The latter to be enhanced by recognizing Bosnia-Herzegovina as a predominantly Muslim nation state, an entree to modern Europe for Islam along a traditional path from Turkey via Albania and the Serbian areas of Kosovo and the Sandžak occupied by Muslim majorities. Bear in mind, this was presented in August of 1995. In the period leading up to Croatian secession, there were signs that indicated the reemergence of the historical axis previously seen in the days of the Holy Roman Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and the Third Reich. This is no conspiracy theory, merely the reappearance of a geopolitical pattern. Evidence of the Axis in action occurred on October 4, 1990, when, even though still a part of Yugoslavia, Croatia was covertly provided with a $2 billion U.S. interest-free loan, repayable in... Evidence of the Axis in action occurred on October 4, 1990, when, even though still part of Yugoslavia, Croatia was covertly provided with a $2 billion U.S. dollar interest-free loan, repayable in full after 10 years and a day. The loan was provided by the Ordre Souverain et Militaire de Saint-Jean de Jérusalem, Chevalier Hospitalier de Malta. This ancient order of Roman Catholic Knights of St. John of Jerusalem was based in Malta during the Christian Crusades against the Islamic forces in Jerusalem. Today, the headquarters building of the Knights of St. John of Jerusalem is located at 61 Via Nizza in Rome, from where these modern Catholic knights wield the influential power of high finance. By the way, these are the Knights of Malta, discussed in RFA Program 21, also discussed in a miscellaneous archive show about the Knights of Malta. William Casey and Alexander Haig, as well as Reagan's ambassador to the Vatican, William Wilson, among others, were members of the Knights of Malta. So was William F. Buckley, the columnist and former CIA officer, and a number of others as well. Continuing with this account of the Knights of Malta, T.W. Bill Carr writes, "Today, the headquarters building of the Knights of St. John of Jerusalem is located at 61 Via Nizza in Rome, from where these modern Catholic knights wield the influential power of high finance. There is a known strong link between the headquarters in Rome and Germany, with reports indicating the organization is even directed by German nationals. Ostensibly, the loan was to fund priority civil engineering projects, with a statement of condition that the loan should not be used to fund military projects. However, well-placed sources said the loan freed up other finances earmarked for civil projects, thus enabling the money to be redirected to equip armament factories and to purchase weapons. The same source said that, despite the no funding of military projects condition, a significant percentage of the $2 billion U.S. loan was misused on armaments. Signatories to the contract on behalf of the Croats were Vice President Dr. Mate Babic, B-A-B-I-C, and Madam Maxa Zelen Mirjana, M-I-R-J-A-N-A, Counselor at the Ministry of Finance, authorized to act on behalf of the Minister of Finance. This $2 billion U.S. loan has never appeared. This $2 billion U.S. dollar loan has never appeared in any Croatian government financial statement. When Waterman Associates, on behalf of the Croatian Embassy in Washington, D.C., sent out a press release in 1994 purporting to show a very low amount of foreign debt and loans, I challenged their figures, mentioning the $2 billion U.S. dollar loan from the Knights of St. John of Jerusalem. The embassy said they had no knowledge of the loan, so I offered to send them a complete copy of the Objet du Financement. My offer was declined, as they said such a document did not exist. It should be remembered that this loan was made to Croatia prior to secession, a time when Croatia was still part of the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia and obliged under the Federal Constitution to disclose any such transaction." By the way, I've noted that loan, October 4th of 1990, was made the day after German reunification. Continuing, "The reunification of the two Germanies and modernization of the East German armed forces made available a substantial pool of weapons and military instructors for the arming and training of a Croatian militia. During late 1989 and throughout 1990, arms flowed from Germany to Croatia to equip militia units. After his HDZ party, or Croatian Democratic Union, won control of the Sabor, the Croatian parliament, on the May 30th, 1990 multi-party elections, the newly elected President Tudjman formed a National Guard Corps, or ZNG. In effect, the ZNG was not a national force in the accepted meaning of the word. Rather, it was the ultra-nationalist, neo-Ustashi military wing of Tudjman's HDZ political party, in the same way that the brown shirts of the 1930s acted as the vanguard enforcement wing of Hitler's National Socialist Party. It has been asked why the Yugoslav government in Belgrade did not prevent the formation of the ZNG. The answer is quite simple. At the time, all the senior positions in the federal internal security organizations and many senior posts in the general staff of the Yugoslavian National Army were held by Croats. For instance, Croatia's first Minister of Defense, Martin Spegelj, S-P-E-G-E-L-J, was a senior general in the Yugoslav Armed Forces at the time of secession. By the way, in a series an eight-part For the Record series entitled Specialized Knowledge and Abilities. I discussed the worldwide fascist and Nazi tactic of infiltrating the military and police in order to control those institutions and also in order to acquire, quote, specialized knowledge and abilities, hence the title of the series, in order to overthrow the democratic state. Note here how the Croatian infiltration of the Yugoslav National Army prevented any effective response once Croatia was ready to make its move and reestablish the fascism of the World War II period. Continuing. With the full support of Germany, and against the wishes of other members of the EC, the HDZ ruling party declared Croatian sovereignty in the Sabor on December 22, 1990, despite strong objections raised in the opposition parties. Shortly after the declaration, President Tudjman introduced a new Croatian constitution which defined Croatia as the national state of the Croatian people and others, pointedly relegating the Serbs, Jews, Gypsies, and Muslims to a second-class status. This was an exact repeat of what had happened in 1941 when Nazi Germany invaded Yugoslavia and set up Croatia as the national state of the Croatian people and others. After the HDZ-dominated government passed the new constitution, discrimination against the Serbs began immediately. Serbs lost government jobs in the civil service, police, local authorities, etc. They were evicted from their homes, many lost the ownership of their own businesses, and Serb newspapers were closed down. A special property tax, applicable only to Serbs, was introduced, and Croatian militia openly looted and closed down Serb shops selling expensive products such as jewelry. These measures clearly indicated to the Serbs living within the administrative borders of Croatia that they must leave the land where they had lived for three centuries or face the consequences of staying. One of the most sinister changes was that every identified Serb in Croatia was issued with a new identity card which incorporated the figure 3 as the eighth figure in the identity number. The figure 3 thus became the Croatian equivalent for Serbs of the Nazi Germany Star of David for Jews residing in countries dominated by Germany. When the time came for ethnic cleansing to start, the figure 3 would ensure that no Serb would escape. The next section is the revived political role of the Croatian bishops. On February 1, 1991, the Croatian Roman Catholic bishops sent an open letter to the bishops of the world and then to the entire Catholic Church worldwide. In the letter, the Croatian bishop said that Belgrade, supported by the Orthodox Church, was advocating that socialism of the communist type be preserved in Yugoslavia. The letter also stated that the Serb-dominated government and army in Belgrade were centralist and were firmly opposing the Western cultural and democratic traditions to be found in the republics with a pronounced West European tradition, i.e., Croatia and Slovenia. This theme, that the Serbs were undemocratic communists and Belgrade was the last bastion of communism in Europe, while the Croats were anti-communist democrats aligned with Western values, culture, and free market economic structures, became the golden bullets fired constantly by the Croatian propaganda machine. It struck home all over the Western world, particularly in the United States, and it quickly became a major driving force behind U.S. policy in Yugoslavia. It also struck home with much of the world's media, thereby setting the scene for the anti-Serb reporting that persists to this day. Pope John Paul II received President Tudjman on May 25, 1991, just as Pope Pius XII received Ante Pavelić, the Ustaši leader of the independent state of Croatia, on May 18, 1941. Note that was 50 years and 1 week later. Continuing, on May 28, 1991, in the Zagreb football stadium, President Tudjman held a military rally reminiscent of Hitler's pre-World War II rallies in Germany. The National Guard Corps, now a large and fully equipped military force, paraded before the political and religious leadership of the new Croatia. The parading troops wore the same insignia as the fascist Ustaši in 1941, and, as in 1941, received the public blessing of the Roman Catholic Church before going out into the towns and countryside to commence the ethnic cleansing of Serbs. An official UN report by UN Secretary General Boutros Boutros-Ghali stated that more than 250,000 Serbs were driven out of Croatia and thousands killed during 1991 and 2 by Croatian ethnic cleansing operations. And note the immediate oppression of Serbs in the, quote, independent, unquote, Croatia. Essentially a replay of what happened in World War II, though not quite as brutal. Continuing. Somehow, the Western media failed to pay much attention to the actions against the Serbs. Only when the Yugoslav army attacked Croatian territory in an attempt to free 5,000 Serbs imprisoned and being killed at Vukovar did the TV cameras appear on the scene to tell the world of barbaric Serbian aggression launched against freedom-loving, democratic Croatia. The root causes of the problem were ignored. History was ignored. Objectivity was left behind in the modern vision bite of instant TV reporting. The Balkans was too complex for a mass audience to comprehend, so keep it simple, paint it black and white, and produce exciting, emotive newscasts. The Balkans replaced the Gulf War in the battle for TV ratings. The Serbs were immediately cast simultaneously as communists and evil-bearded, drunken Chetniks. Anyone with even a vague knowledge of the Balkans would know that this was a contradiction. The Serbian nationalists fighting the Germans in World War II, often miscalled Chetniks, were royalists, not communists. And the next section is entitled, Germany Forced the European Community to Recognize Croatia at Maastricht. By the way, note too that Slovenia and Croatia had been part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire and were much wealthier than some of the other provinces in the former Yugoslavia. On June 25, 1991, both the Slovenian and Croatian parliaments declared independence, seceding from the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. Fighting between Croatian and Slovenian militia units with the confused, poorly led Yugoslavian National Army erupted in many places, with the result that on June 29th, the EC dispatched the so-called Troika peace mission to Yugoslavia. On July 7th, under the auspices of the EC, the Brionna Declaration was adopted. The decisions of Slovenia and Croatia to secede were suspended for 3 months in an attempt to secure peace and to maintain the unity of Yugoslavia, albeit probably in a revised federal structure. From May of 1991 onwards, the Western media was full of biased, anti-Serb reporting, frequently claiming that the communist Yugoslav National Army from Serbia was conducting naked aggression against the innocent, democratic, pro-Western people of Croatia and Slovenia. Germany played the major role in projecting and reinforcing this view of events. At 0500 hours on July 9, 1991, the then German Minister of Foreign Affairs, Hans-Dietrich Genscher, telephoned the U.S. Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs, James Baker, demanding resolute action by the UN Security Council and the Western Alliance against the Serbian terror in Croatia. During his early morning phone call, Herr Genscher pushed hard for economic sanctions to be placed on Serbia and Montenegro, and that Croatia and Slovenia be recognized as independent states. Here again, it can be seen that Germany was striving to bring about the breakup of Yugoslavia in pursuit of its own strategic objectives, and at the same time positioning itself alongside the United States. In this, Germany was aided by Austria. For instance, the Grand Duke Otto von Habsburg, son of the last emperor of Austro-Hungary and now a German member of the European Parliament, spoke strongly in favor of the Croats. In the French newspaper Le Figaro on August 15, 1991, he is reported as saying, quote, Croats, being the civilized part of Europe, have nothing in common with Serbian primitivism in the Balkans. Croatia's future lies in a European confederation to which the former Austro-Hungary could serve as the model to be followed, unquote. Bear in mind that Croatia and Slovenia were part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, headed over by the Habsburgs, or presided over by the Habsburgs. Continuing. On the other hand, in contrast to the German and Austrian strategy at this stage, the EC was still trying to bring about a peaceful resolution of the situation and to maintain the unity of Yugoslavia. That, by the way, is because it was clear that if indeed the Yugoslav Federation was split up, then the centuries-old hatreds would explode again, and basically there would be the bloodbath that has since ensued after the Germans pressured the rest of the EC to adopt their view. Continuing. However, the fighting continued. In an attempt to slow down the fighting, the UN voted on September 25th to impose an arms embargo on all factions in Yugoslavia. Germany ignored the embargo and continued to covertly supply Croatia with arms and ammunition. Fighting intensified, particularly in Croatia. During October 1991, more than 25,000 Serbs were ethnically cleansed from western Slavonia. At the same time, 24 Serbian villages were razed to the ground in the area around Slavonska Pezega, and more than 10,000 Serbs were driven across the border into Bosnia by Croatian ethnic cleansing operations. In December of 1991, EC heads of state and senior ministers gathered for a crucial meeting at Maastricht. Their task was to agree to a treaty that would be a blueprint for the future development of the European community, including across-the-board integration of economic and monetary affairs, a timetable for achieving political cohesion, a far-reaching social policy, and move towards a common policy on foreign affairs and security. Some member states, particularly the UK, knew they would be unable to gain acceptance from their own parliaments for the complete package of proposed measures, and therefore pressed for an opt-out clause on some of the measures. Western European Union Document 1342, Part 2, dated November 6, 1992, indicates that at the Maastricht meeting, the unity of the EC was maintained at the expense of the unity of Yugoslavia. In the course of heated discussions on European security and a common policy on foreign affairs, Germany injected the problems in Yugoslavia. From a position where the EC members were 11-1 in favor of maintaining the unity of Yugoslavia, Germany succeeded at 0400 hours in forcing approval for the recognition of Croatia and Slovenia as independent states. The Maastricht Treaty was signed, complete with all its opt-out clauses, and it was claimed in a press statement issued at the end of the conference that the EC was united on the way forward on all major policy matters. The WEU document reads, "The Maastricht process, therefore, influenced the 12's reactions to the Yugoslav crisis, while that crisis influenced the process of the European Union. It should be underlined that any undertaking that did not have the consent of all member states of the community would have significantly weakened Europe just when it was negotiating the Maastricht Treaty and then proceeding to ratify it." Unquote. In effect, Yugoslav unity was sacrificed to maintain EC unity. By its actions, Germany had proved it had become the dominant power in the European community and was prepared to use its economic strength to achieve strategic goals in the post-Cold War era. A few days after the conclusion of the Maastricht meeting, on December 23, 1991, Germany recognized Roman Catholic Croatia and Slovenia as independent states, effective from January 15, 1992. Germany also gave a promise to gain for them membership in the United Nations. This was effected just 5 months later, on May 22, 1992. I've been reading from a paper entitled "German and U.S. Involvement in the Balkans, A Careful Coincidence of National Policies." This was presented at a symposium on the Balkan War, Yugoslavia, Past and Present, that was held in Chicago on August 31st and September 1st of 1995. The paper was authored by T.W. Bill Carr, Associate Publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs Publications in London.
And once again, that was recorded, that is actually excerpted from the One Step Beyond program of May 16th, 1999. That concludes this segment. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.